back together again, you and I chatting it up on a midweek Wednesday, kicking off a brand new month, Wednesday, April the 1st, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. The question, should the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, guaranteeing so-called birthright citizenship to anybody born on U.S. soil, be changed or even eliminated? We open the Wednesday edition of Connecticut Today wondering what would happen to thousands of Connecticut kids born to undocumented migrants in Connecticut if those changes were made. We got analysis on Supreme Court oral arguments in that case from CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum and legal analyst Mike O'Neill from the Landmark Legal Foundation.
So it in essence, it's a pretty simple question. It really is. I mean, everybody's going to try and make it, you know, conflagrated here and whatever and very confusing. But a major court case today that would affect everybody, in the, not everybody, but thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people in the country, including here in Connecticut, undoubtedly, maybe presently or in the future here in Connecticut. If you are born on U.S. soil and your parents, biological or otherwise, are not citizens, they are whatever euphemism you want to use, they're illegals, they're undocumented, they're what's the one I see now? Non-counted individuals. Yeah, I'm not kidding about that. I actually saw that. Should we bestow, as a country, automatic citizenship to people whose parents are not U.S. citizens? When you boil it right down, although the arguments will go on ad nauseum, and we'll talk about this today and take your calls and take your texts and talk to a couple of national authorities on this from, I guess, opposite sides of the spectrum here politically, it's pretty simple here. And I know people are going to say, well, this is just against Hispanic people or this is just against Latinos or something like that. No, well, The thing is, there are a lot of people, you know, there are Chinese illegals, there are Japanese illegals, there are Italian illegals, there are Polish illegals, there are Eastern European illegals in this country. Now, a lot of illegals tend to be, I guess, if you did a raw number, I don't think I'm going out on a limb here to say that they may be Hispanic or Latino or whatever you want to say, but that's beside the point. I think, honestly, if you're going to treat this the way it should be treated, that is beside the point here. So earlier today, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a Trump executive order. So you may remember some months back, I forgot exactly what it was, the president, Mr. Trump, issued an executive order, said, hey, this birthright citizenship thing here, forget it. Not going to do it anymore. Now, people say, oh, he got struck down by the courts. Well, of course the courts are going to strike it down. You don't make a broad-based constitutional change just with the flick of a pen or two. But Trump knows that. So he got the ball rolling with that. And look, it's a complex situation. It is. It really is. I'm not trying to have it both ways here. I'm not. But we'll start off with this at 203-333-9422. That's our contact number. You know how to get a hold of us, voice or otherwise. Email to Paul, P-A-U-L, Paul, at voiceofct.com. Now, you may say, well, where did this whole birthright citizenship come from? It was the 14th Amendment to the Constitution passed in 1868 that, because of the likely hundreds of thousands or millions of kids of slaves in the U.S. that were here because someone sold off their mothers and or fathers and they were born here, it grants citizenship to almost anyone born within a nation's territory, regardless of their parents' citizenship or immigration status. It was adopted primarily, this is the going answer here. And we all learned this in school, or if we went to a decent school, we did. It was adopted to ensure that former slaves were citizens, and the children born to them as well. It includes children born to immigrants, regardless of their status. So what the 14th Amendment says, that it's probably happening right now, somewhere around this country, could be happening somewhere around the state of Connecticut, might be, I don't know, could be happening in Fairfield County as we speak, could be happening in New Haven County, Hartford County, anywhere. Is there a chance that there is a woman? Yes, only women can have babies. Let's not go down that whole thing. Don't get me going on that. Well, you know, men can have babies. No, they can't, toots. Sorry. Biology 101. But I digress. So right now, you know, there are an estimated 120,000, 125,000, 130,000, 140,000 illegals here in the state. You know, let's say half of them are women. Let's say half of them are of childbearing age and maybe having kids. And the argument to grant these new offspring citizenship automatically is, hey, they didn't have a choice in the matter. Many of them didn't. If they were a kid, they were dragged along by their parents, or mom had the baby here. So we'll be getting some analysis coming out, but this is a huge story with nationwide implications. Don't for one thing say, oh, Paul, this is in the weeds in the courts. No, because trust me, this will affect Connecticut. Because if and when this thing is maybe ruled in favor of the White House, and then I don't know how that would work, but then any children brought here maybe, or born here, I should say, on American soil after a certain date, they're not citizens, whereas maybe some of their cousins or brothers or sisters were. It is a wildly important Supreme Court case. But I wanted to ask you, and if you call in and discuss this or send me a message, we're going to be nice here. We're not going to throw epithets. But this is a really, I think anyway, honestly, I think this is a really, really, really complex issue here. Is it time to end birthright citizenship to almost anybody born on American soil? Again, this harkened back to the post-slavery days from 1865, Civil War ended, 14th Amendment passed, I think in 1868. And Abe Lincoln said, listen, let's just start from scratch here. Slaves that are here, any slaves that were born here, and any future children of slaves are going to be U.S. citizens here. You're on American soil. And millions of people over the years have said, well, that's good, because, listen, when you're in the womb, when, you know, the act happens and it's 9 months later and, oh, look what happened. You didn't exactly enjoy a position where you could comment on the matter. So that's why that was done. But now it's not 1865 or 1868 anymore. No, 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 Maud. It's 2026. And whether you like it or not, the present White House is using these tactics, if you will, is using these issues to stir the pot a little bit. But I think this is interesting, and I'll give you an example of why coming up right here. But what do you think? Love to get your thoughts on this, talk or otherwise, message or email 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. So years ago, not recently, this had to be 10, 15, maybe 20 years ago, I worked on and off. I was still in radio, but I had a couple of side jobs. One I did from, you know, home every night that was easy peasy, and the other one I worked for a contractor, not a construction contractor, but somebody who provided contract services. I don't want to say more than that. Don't worry, everything was legal, but you'll know why. To a local hospital. And so when I would go in that hospital, a very large, mega, well-known, worldwide, widely known hospital, you know, you hear things, you get to know the nurses, you get to know the physician's assistants, even some of the doctors. Hey, how you doing? Oh, you're back. How was your week? This and the other. And I remember talking to someone, and I don't know how the subject came up. Might have been something in the news, but Lord knows this had to be at least 20 years ago. And I think it was on the maternity ward. It had something to do with someone, the mother, obviously. Last I checked, dads don't do maternity ward things. In anything beyond holding somebody's hand, say, come on, honey, push, you're doing great. Shut up, as her head is, you know, spinning on a spit there. Get out of here. But, honey, stop it. And we got her onto a conversation that told me that a certain person or two on that maternity area was not that they were an illegal here, that they had come to the U.S. a few weeks earlier knowing that they were going to give birth. And hence the concept of birth or birther tourism. And you can look that up, too. Birth tourism, meaning there are people around the country. And this is one reason why the White House is pushing against the 14th Amendment, too. They know there are people around the country that and around the world that know, that understand our laws and our Constitution. So you can have a very well-to-do family. We're not talking about, like, destitute people here. You can have a very well-to-do person from China or from Japan or from the Middle East or from South America or from Central America or from, you know, Eastern Europe, whatever. And believe me, this is a thing. And I was told this by this hospital person when the subject came up. They know when they are going to have a baby. Now, how prevalent this is, I don't know. I'll look it up on the break for you. But, hey, I'll just take the chance of flying over, because flying when you're pregnant, you know, the air pressure changes, and you're only at how many pounds per square inch once you're up at 30 or 40,000 feet, whatever. I'm a geek. What can I tell you? And you come here and you have the kid. Oh, my God, I had no idea I was that far along, and, you know, oh, there's Junior. Hi there, honey. Oh, and Junior happens to be, or maybe it's not Junior, maybe it's little Missy there, or Juniorette, or whatever. They happen to be an American citizen, because they were born here, of maybe some well-to-do parents. I'm not blaming the kid. The kid was in the cargo hatch for 9 months, or 8 months and a few days either way. You know what I mean, ladies? I got you. But seriously, in this discussion about the 14th Amendment, and factor Trump out of it, take off the Trump-colored glasses on both sides of the aisle. Whether you think he's some sort of marauding creep or king, though we still don't have kings, those gatherings are working well, or you love the guy. That shouldn't be. This is. I'm glad this went to the Supreme Court. Because it needs to be settled. Now, what is your thought on this? If someone is in a hospital and they plan this out, it's not like they came crawling across the border and the Rio Grande and mom is 8 3/4 months pregnant. Here she comes. Man, she's the size of a house. No wonder she's going to have a kid. But there are people who do this. It's called birth tourism. Hey, have your baby in America or Canada or Europe, whatever. And although I don't think their laws are as, maybe not as stringent or as loose as ours, but you get the idea. So what the court is going to decide here, and we'll hear from it later on with our buddies Mike O'Neill and Thane Rosenbaum from, you know, decidedly, I would think, opposite ends of the political spectrum here. Is that fair? Is that fair? Is it fair to you and I? As taxpayers, and by the way, there are likely, I'll give you the number when we come back from the news here, there are likely, there's no exact number, but I ran a couple of AI asks on this, saying, hey, Mr. AI, yes, how many kids in Connecticut were born here of an undocumented or illegal mom? Not that the person's illegal, you know, I don't like the way we phrase that sometimes, but with illegal immigration status, it's a pretty big number, even the most conservative number I can find from AI. So Question remains, and you can message me on this, email me, or call. And I know some of you may not want to come on the radio because people will hear you and say, oh, are you on that bad man show? Why did you say that? 203-333-9422-333-WICC. All right, the White House at least wants to get the ball rolling on nullifying and getting rid of the 14th Amendment birthright citizenship. That could potentially affect people here in Connecticut. There may be 10 to 20,000 kids who were born here with a mom not of legal status that makes them Connecticut residents. What does this portend? Legal Thane Rosenbaum joins us. Check out the website, of course, for all his books and stuff. ThaneRosenbaum.com from CBS. Thane, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good hearing your voice, buddy.
Hey, subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Did I get that right? Did we hear that today? What did you hear from the oral argument, sir?
Yeah, that's exactly what we thought this would be about. In fact, we learned that the Civil Rights Act that was passed 2 years before the 14th Amendment had different language. And so there's a question of like, well, what was the significance between those, that difference? Look, you're right. The 14th Amendment, the birthright citizenship clause, essentially says that if you're born here and you're subject to the jurisdiction of the laws here, then you are automatically a naturalized citizen here. Donald Trump said, no, don't be silly. This really applies to slaves and their children, because these were one of the three amendments that came after the Civil War. The problem is that Donald Trump is not a lawyer and didn't perhaps realize that in 1898, this scenario happened with a Chinese man who was born to two Chinese people living in the United States who were not citizens, but they were here lawfully. And then they all went back to China, and he came back and he said, "Gay, you know, I'm an American. I was born here." And they said no at the border and took it to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, yes, he was. He was born here. So what's the distinction? Well, the president's Justice Department and the Solicitor General saying his parents are here permanently. They were lawfully permanently here. They weren't illegally here. And they weren't here on temporary visas. And that's what I'm worried about. You know, in 1898, everyone was still welcome in the United States. We didn't really have any border controls. Remember Ellis Island?
Yeah.
Right? People came from all directions. You know, during the time that the 14th Amendment, Irish people were coming every day through New York, you know, and no one ever said anything about it. So the real question really was, well, did this statute really apply, you know, only to African Americans? And that 1898 case suggested it didn't. And in today's oral argument, the justices essentially said, if we actually think that the 1898 case is good law, then it really applies here as well. No matter how you got here, if you were born here, you are an American citizen. Now, remember, I'll tell you what didn't exist, which didn't come up in today's oral argument because it really wasn't something they were interested in, which is, you know, the real world implications of illegal immigrants and something called birth terrorism, where people come here directly to give birth to a baby. And then they now all of a sudden they planted a flag in America. That never happened in the 14th Amendment. It was not in present in that 1898 case either.
And Thane, even if the court was, let's assume there was a predisposition here, which from what I'm reading there isn't, to rule in favor of Mr. Trump, I mean, then the process, I mean, then technically, if the court said, hey, and I don't think they will, according to the prediction markets, we'll get to that in a moment. If the court said, yeah, we kind of agree, yeah, we're going to let him do this. I mean, and, the, you know, scary question here, then what happens? You just can't get rid of amendments.
Right. I mean, that question didn't even come up either. What are we talking about here if it actually happens? Do we retroactively strip people of their citizenship? Does it go only going forward from this opinion? Do we need any statutory language now to back that up? And by the way, I'm sure Donald Trump's going to say, all right, well, let's just get, you know, let's get some statutory language. He tried to do this by way of executive order. It failed. He may try something else. Just clearly, you know, after the 14th Amendment, there were two statutes that pretty much supported the same idea.
Yeah.
So it's not just overturning for the amendment. It's also overturning two pieces of legislation that reaffirm the concept of birthright citizenship. But I do think that Donald Trump, as we know, he never surrenders.
Yeah.
And he's going to think, well, maybe there's a different way. You know, sometimes the Supreme Court turns back what I'm trying to do, but there may be another way to achieve the same result. And I wouldn't be surprised if they start looking into that.
Mm. And Thane, finally, for what this is worth, I took a look a few minutes ago at these new prediction market things, Kalshi
yeah.
and Polymarket, and they all agree with you. They're in the to rule in favor of the Trump executive order. Both Kalshi and Polymarket have it at like 6%. So I think they agree with you, sir. I think they're listening.
But remember, Paul, the Supreme Court didn't have to take this case.
Yeah.
Right. 90% of the cases are not taken at all.
Yeah.
Right. So when they do more than that. So when they do decide to take it, they have to have a reason.
Sure.
And secondly, it didn't look like they're going to rule in favor of the president, but they took this question very seriously.
Yeah.
You know, they were there for over 2 hours. So obviously something was bothering them and they wanted to talk about it.
Yeah.
He's not going to win. But I don't think it's going to be an unanimous defeat either.
Interesting. Yeah, you're right. You can read into who votes for him and why you're against. Thane Rosenbaum, CBS News. Check out his website, ThaneRosenbaum.com, for all information on him, books, and more neat stuff. Thane, thanks, man. We appreciate it as always. Take care.
Anytime for you, Paul.
Right,
thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thane Rosenbaum, T-H-A-N-E Rosenbaum, CBS News. When it comes to legal issues, from the conservative point of view, the Landmark Legal Foundation senior VP there is the one and only Mike O'Neill. Mike, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good. Good afternoon, Paul. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, Mike. I just had Thane Rosenbaum on from CBS. I want to get your opinion on it, too.
Sure.
You know, Mike, I'm looking at the prediction markets here, like Kalshi
right.
and Polymarket. And, you know, there aren't bookies there. There are kind of people in the know,
right.
you know, buying
12,
futures.
13%? Yeah, is that what it is?
Well, what was your guess?
Oh, I was saying 12, 13%.
No, it's down and it's like 6 or 7%. It's 6 or
6. Okay, it was 12, 13% earlier. Before
oh, well, maybe that was before during the questioning.
Right.
What did you glean out of this today, Mike?
Okay, so good news and bad news. Good news, I mean, it depends. If your perspective, again, like myself, is, of course,
yeah.
I'm pro the interpretation that birthright citizenship is not encompassed in the citizenship clause of the 14th Amendment. Arguing from that perspective, okay, the good news was the court was squarely focused on a constitutional issue. I mean,
yeah.
they seem 95% of the oral arguments were focused on discerning the meaning mm-hmm. of subject to the jurisdiction
yeah.
thereof.
And yeah.
You know, so that was a lot of the debate. And so also good news is that I think the Solicitor General did a very, very good job with distinguishing the case of Wong Kim Ark that everybody talks about. He also kind of used a little bit of jujitsu in interpreting Wong Kim Ark to actually supporting his position. There was a lot of the position of the president
yeah.
and, you know, I'll say my position if you want to say it that way, but the position of the president, the pro executive order decision. And that centered around a lot of the discussion about domicile
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, domicile means jurisdiction and that there was so much discussion and assumption that domicile, that this individual, the parents of this baby born to Chinese immigrants or
yeah.
Chinese individuals who were here in the country, number one, they were here illegally, and number two, they had intended to establish a domicile. Ergo, they were subject to the jurisdiction thereof, again, not merely beyond the mere territorial presence.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting arguments proffered by the Solicitor General there, focus on the Constitution rather than just the statutory arguments. Okay, on the other side of the ledger, let's just be honest. I mean, this was a hard case that was going to
yeah.
be made. You had
yeah.
three justices who clearly, you know, we can talk about Jackson, Sotomayor, and Kagan, who are clearly aligned with the traditional interpretation, the one that's held. Justice Roberts, one of his lead questions, I think his first question was something along the lines of, you know, noting the exceptions, right? The exceptions to the birthright citizenship
sure.
application, the children of diplomats or children of they are Native Americans,
mm-hmm.
and his question was those quote unquote quirky exceptions were to be, you could extrapolate that to the broader class of individuals now that the government's seeking to exclude via executive order. So Roberts, that cast him in the question mark territory, probably leaning towards the sides of continuing the traditional mm-hmm. interpretation. I think some questions from Amy Coney Barrett were along those lines as well. Kavanaugh was talking about the role of Congress, so that augurs badly for the president. So we'll see. If that's what the voting markets are saying, 60%. The betting markets are saying, betting markets are saying 6%.
Yeah.
I was originally saying 25-30% chance for the president to successfully have a successful outcome, but I'll leave it to those folks who guide the numbers there.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Mike. I noticed the numbers took a little bit of a dive as the questioning went. But here's the other thing, Mike. And listen, the justices are all human, right? Whether they're left or right, there's 9 people sitting there listening, looking at each other going, well, if we say Trump is right on this, I mean, you might as well take a match and throw it in a gas tank. I mean, you talk about and don't tell me the justices don't think about this. I mean, and then what happens besides the heads exploding and the cleanup on aisle 3? I mean, my God, you know?
Certainly, it would represent a distinct change from the status quo.
Yeah.
I think, and then interestingly, when we're talking about the practical effects of this, they're all the practical effects regarding birth tourism and anchor babies and everything like that. And that the question, of course, was whether the ratifiers of the 14th Amendment would ever contemplate that. And Justice Roberts, again, just to go back to it, had kind of the line of the day, right? That the circumstances change, but the Constitution remains the same, or outside factors out there. So he's kind of brushing off, hey, considering the practical effects of interpreting it along the lines of the executive order. So we're gonna stick with our constitutional analysis, even if you're presenting a parade of horribles that have occurred to this, because we're gonna stick with the bounds of our originalist constitutional analysis here, and trying to again derive the meaning behind the term subject to the jurisdiction thereof by looking at, of course, obviously the text of the 14th Amendment, but then going beyond a little bit and looking at the contemporaneous debates that surrounding it, the 1866 Civil Rights Act, and then other cases that were decided shortly thereafter.
All right. Mike O'Neill, Landmark Legal Foundation. Mike, as always, we deeply love your perspective on these things. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Paul. You have a great day.
All right. There you go. And here's one of the moments we wait for during the week. This gentleman, of course, Hearst Connecticut Media, senior editor and columnist. Also, you can catch him occasionally on the Capitol Report Sunday mornings at 10. He drops by sometimes with our buddy, our pal Tom Dudchick, and a guy who has achieved some talk radio stardom and some journalism stardom, because whenever I mention him in the building, half the people can't stand him and half the people absolutely love him. It's Dan Harr. Dan, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Well, that's how I feel about myself, too, so...
I swear to God, Dan.
No.
I've had people come up to me in the hallway saying, "When's Harr on?" I said, "Wednesday." He goes, "Good, I like him." And then 10 minutes later, it's like, "That guy, oof." But that's why we have you on, Dan. That's why. We love that.
Depends what I say.
Yeah. Tax package, Dan. And what some people see is a little, I don't know, moving the money around in Hartford, shell game, trickery. What's going on there? Now, I see we came out with a kind of a microscopic budget deficit. How does that stand?
Well, let's take the three. You've just brought up 3 or 4 different things, right?
Okay.
So let's take the budget deficit first, right? The budget deficit is a technical deficit. That is to say that we have two buckets, right? We have the operating bucket and we have the volatile bucket. And the volatile bucket is the money that we're not allowed to touch beyond $4 billion or $3.5 billion, right? Anything over that, we're not allowed to touch. We have to put that someplace else. It's not part of operations, right? That part of it is fat and flush, and is expected to yield a $1.8 billion surplus this year, similar to recent years. So we're doing great. That's the part that people make capital gains, dividends, rental income, partnership income, typically wealthier people, almost entirely wealthier people.
Yeah.
And so they're doing great. And the rest of it is doing okay, but corporate profits are down and some sales taxes are a little flat. And the result is that we are down $300 million from where we were a year ago on the operations side. Yeah. And $300 million just so happens to be exactly the cushion that we, by law, build in. Okay. You have to have a $300 million cushion. You have to start every year with a $300 million surplus, essentially.
All right. Okay.
And so that surplus is gone. Some argue that it's $30 million over, some under, but within the margin of error, it's gone. And so it doesn't mean that this is the situation we were in 2017 and 2002, those horrible years where you had to cut deeply. This is not that. This is the bucket that we have operations. So with that all as a context, right, don't worry, but we're not as well off as we were. And by the way, a lot of the reason for that is because Medicaid spending is way over. They have now a taxing and spending package. And lo and behold, the Democrats want to spend more than Lamont. Are you surprised?
I saw that. And now is when the negotiations begin, right, Dan?
That's right. And one of the things that the Democrat-led Appropriations Committee did was it said, we want to spend an extra $150 million without breaking the rules. And in order to spend an extra $150 million without breaking the rules, we're going to do, what's amazing is the number of tricks that they come up with is amazing. Every year, it's something I never heard of. And this is one where we're paying down debt.
Yeah.
We're paying down debt more than we have to.
Okay.
So that out of the volatile money, we're paying down debt.
Yeah.
And so therefore, that's a payment we don't have to make out of the regular budget, so we can use that $150 million in the regular budget on fun stuff, programs.
Fun?
Right?
Oh, okay.
Now, of course, you ask, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah,
well, what you've just done is you've increased spending by $150 million over and above the limit. And that means that next year, you have to do it again. And so this is what the Republicans might say, did say, and that's the big excitement on the spending side.
Some of these folks on the more progressive side of the governor's party, and Dan Haar is the guest. We'll get to Mr. Trump in a minute. They're still pushing for this. They want a point here, 1.7% on capital gains profits. If you're over $2 million as a couple or $1 million as a single, has that got any shot, or is that just good election fodder?
When you're talking about the tax?
Yeah, the surcharge. They want to do this, what did I
no
read?
No chance.
That's what
no
I
chance.
Okay.
That's Senator Looney.
Yeah.
No, not going to happen. But I was a little surprised that the committee advanced that provision because there are a lot of people who don't like it.
Wow.
And as you know, the committees pass things that aren't necessarily going to pass.
Sure.
There's no chance that this governor in an election year is going to increase taxes on anybody. Because remember that volatile group that I just talked about, that volatility, that's who they want to raise the tax on.
Yeah.
So you have to do more than just raise the tax. You have to raise the tax and find a way to use that money inside the cap. And I would say it ain't going to happen.
No.
But what's interesting is that the debate is a real debate between tax cuts and rebates. The governor doesn't think, because remember, we're seeing the operations side of the budget deteriorate.
Yeah.
It's not nearly as bad as it was, years ago,
oh
2017.
Yeah.
It's not near. This is not that. We are not there.
Okay.
But we are at the point where on the operating side of the budget, we do not have surpluses.
Mm-hmm.
We've had those surpluses for 6 or 7 years now. The governor is saying, let's be cautious. Let's give rebates, $200 a person for most people. And you can debate who exactly gets the rebate and so forth, versus some Democrats and virtually all Republicans who want to do actual permanent tax cuts.
Mm-hmm.
The governor is saying we may not be able to afford all those tax cuts. And then within that, what type of tax cuts?
All right. About a minute we have left here. One thing, Dan, I got a lot of feedback on this yesterday. I noticed this governor's proposing, again, it's not a lot of money. It's $10 million in the $27 billion budget, which, I don't. If it's not a lot of money, why are we bonding it? That's what a lot of people wanted to know. He wants some money to be available to fill into some of these cuts being made in federal student loan money by the Trump White House, who says, hey, it shouldn't cost this much to get this kind of nursing degree or this, that, and the other. The money, I don't think, is the grand total is not the big deal to me, Dan. What do you think of the state getting into this business, though?
I think it's a great idea because this is a high payoff because these are the very people who are going to stay here. It's medically proven that if somebody goes to grad school in a state like Connecticut, they stay here, mm-hmm. right? And so if we need whatever, in this case, it's largely nurses, I think, and allied health professionals. But if we need more of them here, why not help them go to grad school and give us a leg up over other states? And that's something that states shouldn't have to do. The federal government did do it, and maybe the federal government's program was too rich. I don't know.
Okay.
But the distinctions that the governor is making are too fine between professional and grad school. These are people that are left out of the distinction that the Trump administration is arbitrarily making. And why not help them?
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. And let's not bond this. $10 million. Just find the cash. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media, senior editor and columnist. Dan, another great appearance. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll chat with you next week. Thank you, sir.
Take it out of the free lunch fund. I'll see you later. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.